What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
I tell you what, it's been a while since we heard that intro. Good afternoon, Mark Latham, leader of One Nation. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. So good to be talking to you back on air, and great to hear that intro, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you have been busy, busy, busy. Of course, I suppose you've been right across the news today because of the situation of what happened last night. As many as 500 Christian protesters clashed with an LGBTQ activist group outside a church where you were speaking. There ended up being two people taken away in handcuffs. Now, you spoke about religious and parental rights. You were invited, weren't you, to speak at St. Michael's Church in Belfield, which is in southwest Sydney, last night. It wasn't an event, am I correct in saying, Mark, it wasn't an event that was organised by you, by your party, but you were invited to speak there, as you've been invited to speak to other organisations during this election campaign.
Correct. That's about the 12th time I was invited by church organisations to speak about important questions of religious freedom, parental rights, protection of non-government religious schools, and responding to the Alex Greenwich agenda, which hurts a lot of these people of faith in the New South Wales Parliament. So I accepted the invitation, as I'd done many times previously, and I received yesterday afternoon advice from the police that these LGBT alphabet protesters were going to block off the road at the front of the church, Margaret Street. So they said to me, the road will be closed because of these protesters. It sounded to me like the climate people who lie on the ground and block the traffic. And they said, don't turn into Margaret Street, go around the back and park at the Belfield Bowling Club, which I did. So I got there and came in the side entrance, went into the church hall, which is at the rear of the property, and spoke to mothers, grandmothers, family members. The parish priest was on the stage. The other guest speakers were there. So it looked like it was going to be, you know, your standard church type of gathering, religious people wanting to hear about religious rights issues in the New South Wales Parliament. Then the police said there'd been the riot out the front, and I got word of that. And I didn't see any of the violence at the front, but I did condemn it at the meeting. The protesters in the first instance should never have tried to, well, said they were going to block the road and deny regular access for parishioners to their church, a place of worship. Is there any limit to where these people will protest when they're saying they're going to block access for people getting into a church? And then, of course, the counter-protesters responded with violence, which is not needed. It's unacceptable in any circumstances. We're better off as a nation sorting out our differences at the ballot box. But Brent, it's a sign of the times, isn't it? That barely, you know, in these election campaigns, people turn up trying to cause trouble. They provoke trouble. They triggered the response. The response was way over the top and inappropriate. And then you saw the scenes. But inside the church hall, about 400 people there in the end, I gave my speech for 25 minutes, answered 8 or 9 questions. I was privileged to receive a standing ovation, and then I left the same way I came in and drove home without seeing any of the violence myself, but obviously I've seen the footage. And as I said to the gathering last night, as you leave here, keep your hands to yourself. Don't be provoked. Don't use violence instead of the power you can exercise at the ballot box. And please disperse peacefully. And thankfully, by the end of the night, that's what they did.
How many years have you been on the election hustings now?
Oh, I first ran for elected office at Liverpool Council in 1987. I'm giving my age away here, but that's 36 years.
Yeah.
There was a time you didn't have any of this rubbish.
I was about to say.
If you're invited to a church hall by a church organisation to talk about important church-related issues, you could do that peacefully. No protesters threatening to block the road and block entry out the front. I see now they had their own cameraman there who's shopping the material around to the media for free.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of think, well, maybe the setup is becoming more obvious of what they were trying to provoke and the footage they were trying to create. But it's just plain wrong. Look, whether you're the protester or the counter-protester or the counter-counter-protester, can everyone just take a step back, allow candidates to address meetings peacefully, exercise your point of view at the ballot box. If you don't like me, vote against me. If you do like my party, vote for us. And that should be the way it was in Britain until about the last 5 or 6 years, that was the way it happened in Australia. And I think it's a tragedy that we've gone down this path.
Politicians should be allowed to speak. Everybody should be allowed to speak. But conversely, people should also be allowed to protest, but not in this way. Not tying yourself to roads or not throwing people to the ground, not becoming aggressive. I mean, I think I heard you say this morning, if you want to protest, turn up with your placards, your signs, your chants, do all that. But that's as far as you go. Make your protest, but don't allow it to become aggressive.
Yeah, well, do it on the footpath and don't try to inconvenience people. It's like those climate protesters who cause massive traffic jams. And there was a traffic jam there last night in Belfield because of this. And climate protesters who try to inconvenience others. I think the golden rule is you can protest till you're blue in the face as long as you don't inconvenience or hurt other people. And that's where democracy should draw the line. As soon as you're trying to block traffic, block access to a place of worship, a sacred church, well, you've gone too far, and if you respond with violence, well, you're just as guilty. So, you know, everyone's got to take a step back. Politics has become too divisive, and obviously some groups are going out there to try and trigger these reactions and create sympathy for themselves, but, you know, when you get to the point of blockading a church or threatening it, you know, I don't think that's got any place in our democracy, and all the people of religious faith would feel that way.
I follow you on Twitter, and I note that you have been tweeting a lot about Matt Keane and saying a lot of different things about Matt Keane. I've had a couple of calls this afternoon from people when we were promoting the fact that we were going to be speaking to you, and one person, in fact, asked me to ask you about Matt Keane. He faces, am I right in saying he faces a 16% swing against him in his seat of Hornsby? Is that correct or not?
Yes, Sky News reported that yesterday, that there's an industry group that's done some polling. I know who they are, and they're quite reliable, and it indicates that Matt Keane's primary vote has dropped from 53% to 37%, a 16% swing, and 15% for One Nation, which is a big vote for us on Sydney's North Shore side. So it just indicates the people there, they must be thinking voters in Hornsby, because they worked out that they thought they elected a traditional Liberal in Matt Keane 4 years ago. He turned out to be a left-wing green energy, green preferences, green everything, and they're saying, well, if you want to be a green, you're going to lose a lot of support in Hornsby.
Obviously, Matt Keane's got his supporters, but gee whiz, every time you hear someone who isn't a Matt Keane fan speak, the word dangerous seems to be part of the conversation. He and his policies are dangerous.
Well, we've got, because of his energy policy, AEMO saying we're going to have blackouts in New South Wales, particularly after the closure of Eraring and coal-fired power station in 2 years' time. And, of course, this is where the sharp electricity price increases have come from. Matt Keane's levied $138 million electricity tax in New South Wales to pay for all the new transmission wires to go to the back of Bourke for wind farms and solar farms, and those costs are passed directly on to consumers, increasing bills by 5% and more to come. So his policies have been a disaster. I said that in the State Parliament 2 years ago when we had 85 divisions saying, Matt Keane, understand, he's going to drive coal-fired power out early and you won't have the backup power in place, the pumped hydro and the gas peaking plants. Snowy 2.0s over time and over budget. The Curry gas peaking plant was delayed because Chris Bowen's stuffing around with hydrogen. And this is what's come to pass, that the lights will go out when we lose Eraring, which is 25% of the New South Wales electricity generation.
I have a question here from a listener, Brett. They asked me to ask you by email, could you please ask Mark Latham, when you have him on this afternoon, where One Nation's preferences are going?
We don't recommend preferences. We say just vote one for One Nation in the lower house, one in the upper house where I'm heading the ticket, Group Q. One above the line, and that's a formal vote for One Nation. So our voters, as a rule, again, thinking voters, they don't like allocating preferences, three-quarters of them don't. And under the optional preferential system in New South Wales, you don't have to preference. You can just go one in the lower house, one in the upper house, one plus one, and that's your formal vote.
Okay. The New South Wales Premier, his signature election promise, it seems like it may be a bit of a dud. There was some research around, I believe, this week. This is the superannuation-style savings fund for children. It doesn't appear at this point that it's actually a vote winner, Mark.
Well, there's a couple of problems with it. It's not means-tested, so millionaires can gain this government benefit, which is inappropriate. How about some money for pensioners and other people doing it tough with power bills and cost of living? So the non-means-testing is wrong. the benefits for children can't be realised until they turn 18, and obviously for some of them that's a long way off. But my chief problem with it, Brent, is that, you know, Perrottet assembled all those children on the stage at his policy launch, but he's run up a net debt in New South Wales of over $120 billion. That's $17,000 for every man, woman and child in the state. And mostly those children, their generation's going to have to repay the debt. And the debt interest bill in New South Wales is more than we spend on the police and more than we spend on TAFE. That's how big and bad it's got. So if you said to those kids, would you rather clear the debt burden on average of $17,000 or would you rather have Perrottet's $400 a year? I know what the kids would say, get rid of the debt burden. $17,000's a lot of money that their generation and probably their kids are going to have to pay off. So I think it's a bit of a false horizon that he's promised the children, when it's better off to balance the budget, get it into surplus over time, and pay down the debt.
Do you agree or disagree with this? Again, another poll, but this is what elections are all part of these days. New South Wales Labor is seen as the party to best deal with rising living costs. The Coalition is seen as the most capable manager of the state's economy. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, the economic management by the Coalition is over $120 billion of net state debt, a massive budget deficit, $12 billion budget deficit. I don't think that's very good economic management at the current time, because that debt and deficit stimulates the economy. It's one of the reasons inflation is going up and interest rates are going up. So we're much better to bring inflation down, minimise the interest rate rises by getting budget, state and federal, back into surplus. And as for Labor with cost of living, well, you know, the electricity bills, Labor voted for the Matt Keane plan, the $138 million electricity tax, One Nation policies to take it off. Chris Minns said he'd keep it. So I don't see how Labor does a very good job. Plus, they're against gas exploration and gas production. You want to bring down the gas bills on cost of living? We've got to do better in New South Wales. We've got all the gas in the ground, and we're only 5% self-sufficient in gas, which just shows you how crazy the system's become.
You're in Cessnock today, are you not?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm here in the great city of Cessnock with our candidate, Quinton King. There's no National Party candidate here because he got disendorsed last week. So it's basically us versus the Labor incumbent, Clayton Barr.
Right. And what are you basically saying to the constituents, the people in Cessnock?
Well, we've released our policy for Cessnock, which is to halt the transition to a so-called green energy economy, which will preserve the 75,000 coal-reliant jobs in the Hunter Valley, a lot of which are based here in Cessnock. We want to use the money that you save on spending on transmission wires and corridors out to the back of Bourke to put that into a special Hunter electricity rebate, $300 for households annually, $500 for businesses. And one of the forgotten issues for Cessnock is to build the ring road. Cessnock in the western districts is expanding, new housing estates, the roads, particularly Maitland and Wallumbye roads, are becoming very, very crowded. And the council here, to its credit, has got an excellent transport strategy for traffic, and that involves building a ring road. It looks to me a bargain at $95 million. So the money we save on not building all these transmission wires out to the west of the state, we want Cessnock to have the ring road for the traffic to flow and for the city to be set up for the next 20 or 30 years.
I saw a tweet from you, I think last week it was. You said, I'm asked about One Nation's view of balance of power in New South Wales Parliament. You say, a Labor minority government will seek alliance with the Greens, so One Nation would never touch that. We would only deal with a coalition minority government if they got rid of Matt Keane and his green agenda. Do you want to expand on that thought?
Well, obviously, One Nation's not going to be party of a Labor government that's in bed with the Greens. The Greens support full drug legalisation, gender fluidity teaching in schools, closed down coal and gas yesterday. So, you know, we're the anti-Greens. It would be impossible to be part of that setup if Chris Minns had minority government and looked to the Greens, as I think he will. I think that's inevitable. We saw it in the Julia Gillard era. We've seen it at state level in Tasmania. So we wouldn't touch that. And as for the Liberal Party, well, they're green too, aren't they? Matt Keane and the agenda we've discussed is in many respects just as bad. But if the Liberals got rid of Keane and sent him to Canberra or Timbuktu, then we'd sit down and have a talk. But, you know, are they going to dump their deputy leader? Well, maybe the voters of Hornsby will dump him going by that poll.
If you believe the polls, they're saying it's very, very close. What's your feedback?
Well, out there, I know One Nation's doing well. We're seen as a party that can disrupt the two-party system. The feedback I'm getting is that the old parties, Labor, Liberal, National Party, they've had a good go. They haven't done a very good job. They seem to think they've got it all locked up to themselves. It's time to have some fresh blood, a fresh party like One Nation disrupting the system and giving people a bit more choice. And Brent, this is my ninth election campaign. You mentioned, I mentioned 1987 earlier on. This is my ninth, and I've got to say the feedback on the street is as good as anything I've ever seen. So I'm very encouraged, and I think we're doing well.
All right. Well, I know you're busy. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us this afternoon in your busy schedule. Best of luck for Saturday, and I guess we'll talk all about the result next week. Let's hope it's not a hung parliament.
Absolutely, yeah. And great to hear you back on the airwaves. Welcome back, and I look forward to our weekly discussions, which I've always thought were great. One of the best parts of my media week. So let's get back in the groove, eh?
You bet, mate. Can I just, before you go, nothing to do with politics, but there was a story about you and your weight loss last week, and I can't let you go without saying you lost, was it 20 plus kilos in 7 weeks?
Yeah, last year. And the good news in the election campaign, I've kept it off. Well, I've got to say, I went to the Knock Cafe in Cessnock for lunch and had pie and chips. So it's a bit of a breakout there, but hopefully it won't be 20 kilos worth. No, I'm going well and feeling like I'll live an extra 10 years, which, of course, is bad news for the Greens.
All right, Mark. Thank you, mate. We'll talk to you again next week. Good luck on the weekend.
All the best. Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Mark Latham, leader of One Nation.